James chapter 1, there is one of the first transitions that occur in this letter happens at verse 19. And it gives us a little bit of an opportunity, besides the very practical nature of what we're about to study, it gives us a little bit of a chance to kind of consider how James approaches matters. Notice that what generally happens in this letter, instead of it being outlined like here is this subject and then point A and point B and so forth, like I generally will outline something and then number two and that type of thing, what James does is to discuss one matter all the way through until he brings up a certain idea here that he wants to deal with, and then he starts with that idea and pursues it. Generally, each section will begin with the last thing that's been talked about here. In this case, you notice that James mentions in verse 18 of James chapter 1, the word of truth. Now, when you bring up the word of truth and you think of Christian responsibility toward the word of truth, the thing that you have to confront is the difference between listening to it and actually doing it. That's a pretty significant matter, isn't it? And in a practical letter like James is, where he wants to talk about living as a servant of the Lord in the very real world, This is obviously a very significant thing. I'd like to also suggest to you that this is also the natural outgrowth of the subject matter that he's been discussing. And in the first part of this chapter so far, he has been speaking about or writing about, remember, trials and temptations that Christians either have to endure or overcome in living for the Lord. I'd like you to consider for a moment now how trials and temptations might impact our doing what we have heard in the Lord's Word. When you put those two things together, what kind of challenges do you think we'll confront? What happens to people's intensity or interest in doing what the Lord's Word says when they are under severe trials or strong temptations?
You're evacuating the train. You have it saved, and you kind of fall back to.
All right.
Ways.
All right. You hopefully can resist the tendency to go to default, which is not set on what really the Lord's will is. That's one possibility. I hadn't thought about that.
It
either goes down or it goes up. Your faith either grows weaker or stronger. Can you think of anything else, Larry?
Most people are like me. We eventually drift into thinking, okay, I need to do this, I need to do this, without asking God for direction.
All right. All right.
And when we endure trials and temptations, it shakes me up.
All right.
And makes me realize who I am dependent on for everything.
All right. It may, instead of humbling us, it may lead us toward the focus on the urgent instead of on the important. That may happen. All right, all of the points that you guys have made, I think, are very practical, and they're all true. Ruth, one more.
I'm just thinking that sometimes our humanness comes out, and we let our frustrations and anger and things like that.
Now you're headed in the direction the text goes here. And that's what I want for us to see for a second here. That look at the succeeding verses here to verse 18. Is it, in light of what you said, is it an accident or just a happenstance that he now speaks of being quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger? How might our familiarity with the word of truth contribute to anger when we are in the middle of trials and temptations? All right, exactly, Chatty. Why is he doing this to me? And where is God? Where are his promises in the middle of this? Isn't that a practical matter also? Now, go ahead a little bit farther in what he says here. Notice the mention in verse 21. Receiving with meekness the implanted word. How might that be subject to challenge when we're facing trials and temptations? You have to think about what meekness is to answer that question. And the implanted word means that it's already been sown in your life and you've already received it. I think the point is it can get awfully hard to submit to the instruction of the Lord's Word when you're either the pressure is on you from a trial or from a temptation. You can get to kind of resenting the discipline of the Lord's Word when that, at least I don't know about you, but I can. And you think about that. All right, now look at verse 22. What about the doing of the word and not just hearing it, or being like the person who looks in the glass and then forgets what he sees? How may that be attached to these two matters here? Well, some of you mentioned it already. We can drift from it and put off acting on the important teaching of the word because we have more urgent matters going on in our lives right then. And then he gets down to someone who thinks he's religious, that is, he's going through the rituals and the motions and so forth of religious activity, but he is not bridling his heart, he's not caring for other people, and he's not keeping himself unspotted from the world. How would that, or how could that be attached to the collision of these two matters here? When you're facing a hard trial or a tough temptation, then you may find yourself going to church and sitting through the services, but it's not having the practical impact in your life in terms of what you say, how you feel about other people, and how you react or interact with the world. And so I think that is the setting of the passage that we're dealing with here. James brings it up because of the mention of the word of truth and because of the context, which has been dealing with temptations and trials. And that's the way we'd like to kind of try to think through this section this morning. All right. Now, you'll notice that verse 19 begins, I think the King James begins with wherefore, doesn't it? And most of the newer versions will translate the phrase, you know, or know this. The words are like one letter difference in the original language, and there is a textual question with it. So just be aware, but either way, it's connected to what goes before it, where it's mentioned that the Father of lights gives every good gift, and that he's already taken the initiative to bring us forth by the word of truth to be his creation, the first fruits of his creation. Now let's look at verse 19 through 21 to start with. Verses 19 through 21. Eddie, would you mind to read that section, please?
Know this, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your soul.
All right, very good. Now, notice the my beloved brothers statement, and notice in verse 2, he has addressed his readers already as my brethren. In verse 1 of chapter 2, he uses that phrase again. Verse 14 of chapter 2, he uses that phrase again. All of this emphasis on practical behavior is family behavior. And Paul and James deals with it that way. He's not trying to just talk down to people or to scold them. He's trying to instruct them in a brotherly way. Now, the three things that he calls for every person to do in this verse are what? What three things?
Let's sit here.
All right. He says, first, every person is to be quick to hear. What do you think he means by that?
Willing to listen.
All right, willing to listen. Can you go further? Is he talking about just detecting the sounds?
People want to speak.
All right, too many people want to talk at the same time. But what do you mean?
You can listen as well as you hear. I think you can listen to somebody, but whether that's registering.
All right. So he's talking about you use the word registering. He's not just saying, I want your hearing to be 20/20, if there's any such thing as that. He's saying, I want you to pay attention. I want you to, go ahead, Ruth.
Well, I'm thinking you need to be careful what you hear, too.
All right, that's true. But in this case, that is defined, I think, by the mention of the word of truth just before. And it has an even broader connection to that. But the point I'm trying to get at is if you're quick to hear, it means that you are eager to understand people. David?
Yes, that's to be willing and ready to listen to the word of God and to put it into practical use in your life.
And you,
it's just not words, it's part of your life.
All right, you're trying to understand that this is immediately applicable to hearing the word of truth, but it is true, isn't it, in a wider way. The people who talk about building relationships use the phrase, seek first to understand and then to be understood. That's the way it will typically be said. You talk about communication in a family or in a friendship or whatever. And with the Lord, it's this way. You're trying to know God's mind and know God's heart by listening to what He has to say. I think this is also part of the teachable spirit, isn't it? This is, if you want to apply it to today, for example, is James of the opinion that it is the teacher or preacher's job to get my attention and hold it? Or is he saying, look, you bring something to get it in? No, I think that's you are responsible for eagerness to hear, and that does. He's going to say in chapter 3 something to teachers too, but you think about what he's getting at. First, be quick to hear, and then he says what?
Slow to speak.
Do we ever have any trouble with the order of this list here? It's more fun to talk, and we are more interested in whether people understand us than whether we understand them sometimes. But This is the first hint in James of something he's going to bring up in every chapter, and that is the bridling of our tongue, or the controlling of our tongue. And he'll apply this a little bit later. Let's look at a couple of statements on the wisdom of this instruction here. In Proverbs 10, Brennan, get Proverbs 10 and verse 19. Tim, you get Proverbs 17 and verse 27, if you will. And this is also one of the first connections of James with the wisdom of the Proverbs. It's something that comes up very frequently in this book, and you'll see it. All right. Now, keep the context in mind. What I'm saying, what James is saying is, when a temptation is pulling at you, or when a trial has got the pressure on you, that's when he's saying you be eager to hear what God has to say, or what other people have to say, and then slow to speak. And this is connected with what he has to say about the outburst of anger in the next verse also. All right, so Brendan, Proverbs 10:19.
In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise.
All right, what do you think he means? In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. All right, the more things that are said when a trial is going on. Now, does he mean here, just don't say anything?
The Bible says that a word is seasoning and a word is choosing.
All right. The Bible also teaches that we ought to talk to give grace to those who hear. We have to speak to be building up. Where there is not communication, a relationship starves to death. So we don't have the right to say nothing. So what is he? Is he just calling for a quieter disposition? Some of us are quieter by nature. We don't say much. Some of us talk all the time. We won't use any names for that. So what's he saying there?
Well, too often times people are so quick to say what they want to say, they're not listening to what the other person's saying at all. They don't take it in. They don't try to understand. They just want to say what they want to say.
I knew a fellow one time, they had a good friend. They were always at each other and trying to talk to somebody, and the friend spoke up about something and just got completely off the topic, and they got by themselves, and the one guy says to the other one, "Your problem is you don't listen when people are talking, but that's not your worst problem. Your worst problem is you don't listen when you're talking." So that's maybe the part of this here. The quick to hear means eager to understand. The slow to speak means that you show some restraint and thoughtfulness in what you say. You realize the power of your own words, and you're trying to bring your own words in line with the word of truth and what the word of truth says. That's the thought. Now, Tim, what was the other verse? It's 17:27.
He who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding.
All right. Restraining your words and having a cool spirit go together, because hot words can really stir up people's spirits. And then one other passage, and this is a prayer, I'll bet this is a prayer we've all prayed, from Psalm 141, verses 3 and 4. Psalm 141, verses 3 and 4. Let me read this one. Set a guard, the old versions will say, set a watch. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Have you ever prayed this one? Do not let my heart incline to any evil, to busy myself with wicked deeds in the company of men who work iniquity, and let me not eat of their delicacies. All right, Eddie?
There's an old saying, an adage that says, it's better to be thought a fool
and to open your mouth and be proven.
Yes. And by the way, the Proverbs speak to that idea also. So anyway, slow to, quick to hear, slow to speak, and then what else? I think this might be attached to the previous two. Slow to anger. And I found out in working on class that the word for anger here is not the word for an outburst of temper. It's the word, this is a term which suggests stewing over something. And some thought having gone into it. Now, what is he saying here? Is he saying you must never experience any anger?
Righteous anger.
All right, there is such a thing as righteous anger. And Mark 3 and verse 5 shows that Jesus got angry. Anger is an emotion. It's not right or wrong. Slow to anger, however, means what?
Not wearing your feelings on.
All right, you're not wearing your feelings on. So one of you used the term a while ago when we were discussing how trials and temptations and the word of truth go together. Somebody brought up frustration. I mean, when the pressure's on and you're weary, when do you say things in your marriage that you regret? When do you say things in your friendship that don't help? Isn't it when frustration, when you've got a load on, when you're tired, when we say that we're back to the end of our rope, that kind of thing. This is saying, at least let the rope be long. I mean, don't be somebody who's always ready to explode into anger. That's not what the word of truth would ask us to do. Let's notice that this idea comes up in the Proverbs as well. Proverbs 14 and verse 29 is one starting place. And then we'll look at two other statements as well. Proverbs 14 and verse 29. Marnie, read that one for us, if you will.
He who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive consults folly.
All right, now, how is it, obviously, one who has a hasty temper or one who's impulsive is going to contribute to some bad outcomes, but how is it that a person who is slow to anger has great understanding? How's that the case?
They'll continue to listen. They're not angry, already upset about it. They'll continue to listen and try to understand what's going on here, what's going on.
All right. That's exactly right. So the fact that he is slow to anger may contribute to his understanding, but also the fact that he's understanding makes him slow to anger, right? Because if a person's slow to anger, he has some feel for people. His understanding has some feel for people. He makes allowances for people. He understands the humanness of people. And he doesn't find something to get angry about in every single little event that may come along. All right, look at 16:32, Proverbs 16:32. Brian, get that one for us. And Jan, if you'll get Proverbs 19 and verse 11 for us as well. I'm just trying to show that James is talking here about issues that are biblical themes, and wherever people have to confront how to live for God, okay? Brian?
He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh the city.
All right, he's saying it's easier to be the mayor than it is to rule your own spirit. To master your moods and to talk right and think right, no matter what to do, that's the hardest thing there is in life. And that's what he's saying there. That's the strength, the greatest strength there is. Jan, 19:11, did we say?
A man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression.
All right. There, if the strength is controlling your spirit, then the glory is to get to the place where you can be understanding enough to overlook, to bear with or to understand another person. All right, now there's quite a challenge. Now, what is the reason for James' focus on these three simple-looking steps, but hard-to-do steps, his connection of these things with the word of truth? Well, look at verse 20. What does he say there?
For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God.
All right, why do you think that's true? The anger of man does not tend to contribute to the successful pursuit of the righteousness of God, or doing right as God would expect us to do. Why is that torture?
The anger of man basically puts that void between us and God.
All right.
Can accomplish.
All right. First, anger, and this is why I pointed out that the word here is the stewed upon kind of anger. The more you stew upon anger, the more there tends to be the sense of alienation. And what happens to the molehill? All right, it definitely grows. And you can, when you're angry with somebody, then you begin to imagine in everything that person says or does something that's offensive, and it becomes a worse and a worse problem. Now, the more angry you are, or I am, then the less interested we become in what we should do. And the more interested we become in satisfaction, which too often means not I'm going to listen to this person and understand this person, but I'm going to give this person a piece of my mind and right back to them, you know. And there are times for the heart-to-heart talk, this is how I am feeling about things. But that's got to be the exception instead of the rule in our lives. If that gets to be the way everything happens all the time, then you have a problem. So what he's saying is people tend to do things when they're angry that they wouldn't do if they were thinking. Right? Did you hear any of the stories about road rage during the holiday season? What happens in a case like that?
Somebody loses it,
but somebody loses it. I mean, people do things that no thinking person would do, and people end up getting hurt over it. So James' teaching is very practical. If you're going to be a husband or a wife, if you're going to be a parent, you're going to treat your parents right, going to be a brother or sister in the church, or if you're going to be a child of God in the real world, these three little guidelines are exceedingly important, aren't they? Now, any further observations?
So practical. Oh, they can be a challenge.
All right. I think what Brian read a while ago about being more mighty than the city, if you can halfway succeed at those three things, That would be a wonderful strength. You know what I said about the snowflakes? I'm intending to take back. Okay. Any other comment about these?
You know, if we were a little more quick to hear and slow to speak, there are times when, say, with Tim Rice, he might spout off at me, and if I'm really listening to him, he's not really mad at me. He's frustrated with something
yes.
else. But I'm...
You know he's been here working at your building.
I know that gold has been here that day.
Or I have, yeah.
I'm the easiest person to speak to like that. And if you are really quick to just get back at somebody or to just say something, you're really not hearing what's, you know, it's like the lady who takes your groceries or something, the cashier. She may be really curt to you. Somebody may have just really ran her down the road before you ever got there.
Or she may have been working 12 hours already.
And
she may have a sick baby at home.
Sometimes we just are too worried about what not what really the person is trying to do.
What we refer to in Arkansas is making Mobile into a mountain.
Yeah.
You become Mobile and become a mountain.
Yeah. And what happens then is if that other person's response to you doesn't fit what has actually happened between you and that person, then you can pretty well know, if you think about it, that that other person is going through something you don't know about right then. And that's part of it. Okay, Todd?
Okay,
that's what you get for scratching your nose. It's like making a bid. You bought something you didn't know about.
I'm trying to listen to you.
Okay. any other things you guys want to bring up?
Soft dance between grass is hard to do, but it does make the other person feel about this talk that you got.
which can't be the only point, but hey, if it happens, you know.
That's not why you do it. That's hard to do when somebody is really friendly to you.
To be slow to speak, remember, Monty brought this up a while ago, means not just to put up with everything before you talk. It means to speak so as to give grace to the hearer, to build him up, to fit the need. And that really is a challenge with this. All right.
Paul started out by saying, my beloved brethren, he loves these people.
Yes.
He has their best interest at heart.
Yeah. And how we talk then and listen really adds up here. Now, verse 21 becomes important. When he mentions putting away all wickedness or filthiness here is thinking evil. It's the mindset that produces evil. And then rampant wickedness, this is wickedness that has taken over. I guess what I'm saying is I think that he is making reference in verse 21 to the things he's mentioned in verse 19. Where verse 19 is not honored, then people don't care how other people feel. They say whatever strikes them, and anger is the tone. And where that happens, then filthiness and rampant wickedness takes over. So what he calls for them to do here is to put those kinds of things away. And that's not a one-time battle, is it? This becomes something that always is a task for us. And then notice that he says to receive with meekness the implanted word. Now, the implanted word would be the same as the word of truth in verse 18. The fact that it is implanted means, and that these are beloved brothers means, that they've already heard it and they've already gladly received it. Right? Acts 2 shows that gladly received it. So what is he asking them to do if they already are Christians and if they already are beloved brothers? What is he asking them to do when he says receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls? Do what, Chatty? All right, he's asking them to submit to the instruction. He's asking them to keep on doing what the word calls on them to do. And I want you to see the force of what he's saying here. When you are angry, that is the hardest time in life to listen to reason, isn't it? I mean, even if you're angry with yourself, if you're angry with yourself, you're angry with another person, that's the hardest time to listen to reason and to be disciplined by instruction. Okay? What he's telling them here is, be the kind of person who is willing to put away the wickedness either thought or acted upon, and to be gentled by the instruction of the Lord, by what the Lord's word says. Meekness means what? Alright, it's translated humility sometimes, it's translated gentleness sometimes.
Strength under control.
Strength under control is a favorite word. My favorite description of meekness is a strong gentleness. And here is the person who places his strength under the control of what the Lord's Word says, even when the emotional pressure is on him. Boy, there's nothing harder than that. And then, when he says, which is able to save your souls, if these are beloved brothers, then that means that in terms of initially becoming a Christian, their souls have been saved already, right? So what's he mean by this, which is able to save your souls?
Don't do it.
All right. First thing is that baptism is not the end of everything in the Christian life. It's the beginning of it. That's the first thing. That what was embraced then can be forsaken. Don't forget that. But just think of all of the ways in which the instruction of the Lord's Word is able to enrich your life and to lift it to a higher plane and to make it better. Will what James said here make you a better person just as an individual if you can do those three things? Will it give you a better family life? Will it make you a better friend? Will it make you a stronger member of the church? How about in the community? Jan brought up going to the grocery store and shopping in the checkout lane. If you practice this, will you be a blessing or a curse to the lady in the checkout lane? I guess it depends on how much is in your basket there, but you see what James is saying is something more than just if you'll do this, you'll get to heaven. Although that, of course, is highly important. What he's saying is, it will make your life a blessing. If you will make this a practice or way of life. Was that the second bell?
Yes.
Sorry. I was not slow to speak, slow to quit. Thank y'all for being with us today.